Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I was going to say disarray. I don't even know if that's the right word to use here. But the dysfunction with the New York football Giants and just reacting. We're extending, obviously, the conversation from yesterday off another horrific loss for the Giants and bad performance. The idea that it's time to move on definitively from Shannon Dable. But just because we might think that it's definitive doesn't mean that the Giants think it's definitive. And the latest report of the New York Post today, you wake up, it's a split ticket, meaning that it's not so fast that both guys would go at once, BT. For me, that would be the literally the worst thing the Giants can do in this spot is keep Joe Shane and fire Brian Dable.
Yeah, I mean, the word that I would use is uncertainty where we are now with the Giants. Not for us. I mean, we've made our opinions very clear here, and I don't think either you know, man at this point in terms of their job has distinguished themselves enough to have an advantage over the other. Like, I don't think Dable should stay and Shane could go. I don't think Shane should go and Dable should stay. I think that they should both go. And there's just a ton of evidence here. I mean, first of all, it's always got to be about winning, right? And then when it's not about winning, it's like, okay, well, what about the other optics that matter to ownership? And, you know, whether it's 40 or 50,000 fans flooding the stadium and taking it over of the other team. And soon, when it's a non-high-profile team like the Niners, there will be more empty seats rather than opposing fans coming in. I don't know how you look at that and say this is the direction that I want to go. You can't beat Philly. You can't beat Dallas. I know they beat Philly this year. I get it. But in, you know, overall 2-14 since they got here, they can't win in the division. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and I don't know how you can make a case for Joe Shane. I can make a case for Brian Dable. I'm not going to, because I think that both guys need to. It's time to just move on and do better here. Raise the expectation. You can do better than what Brian Dable and Joe Shane have done here for 4 years. And you gave them every opportunity. The owners gave them every opportunity to prove otherwise, and they just failed. But I can make a case for Brian Dable, year one, succeeding with a basically talentless roster, one that he inherited from Dave Gettleman, and getting to the postseason and winning a playoff game. And then again, year four now, identifying the quarterback that he wanted, going to him when he did, and having success with that quarterback, at the very least from an offensive standpoint, if not as a win-loss record overall. Those are two major check marks in favor of Brian Dable. Where's the check mark in favor of Joe Shane? Now, again, it wouldn't be enough for me to keep Brian Dable because I believe they could do better. I just think he's been a losing hand. The three years in a row, they start the year 2-7 through the first nine games. I mean, what more does anybody need to see or say about it? But where's the evidence for Joe Shane? He's been god-awful, so much so that I wouldn't let him make a move here ahead of the deadline today, BT. I'd have a freeze on, and then I would look to move on from those guys sooner than later here and stop the delaying the inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do the freeze just because if somebody calls up and they're out of their minds and they're trying to make one Super Bowl run, I wouldn't want to preclude doing a decent deal for the sake of moving, you know, not allowing Shane to do it. I know what you mean fundamentally. I wouldn't do that. But to me, the other thing is, like, I just don't get this. I just get real separation from the thought that Jackson Dart is going to drown without Brian Dable. I think that that's so short-sighted. I think it's a discredit to the young man's moxie and his talent and his ability to rise and his ability to lead and eventually elevate this team to a place where we all want to see him get. So, you know, outside of this ridiculous winning streak, which is never going to happen, that changes the perspective of how we just have to think out of respect of seven straight wins or 5 of 6, again, something that's not going to happen. There's really nothing that I can see that would change my mind. Here.
Let me say it. If they won 7 of 8 to close it out,
yeah,
you're changing your mind.
If they win 7 of 8, me or them? Okay,
no, you,
me.
You.
I wouldn't. I'm not. I don't. I don't believe that they've got the right men in place here.
That's my point. So
I know.
It doesn't matter.
So
I don't...
it doesn't matter. You've said that as well.
Well,
I just don't think there's any chance they're going to win 7 of 8. So to me, to even think about that, it's preposterous. But it wouldn't change it for me.
Me neither. But if they did, if they won 8 in a row, it does not change what I fundamentally believe at my core based on 3+ years of evidence.
Yeah.
So that I'm not coming on making that decision unless I believe. If they went 7 of 8... Well, if they won 8 in a row, no, that's factored in. Like, I'm factoring in that there are 8 more games to go. When I say that I want them both to be out because I've made my decision, regardless of what happens the rest of the way, if they won 8 in a row, I still believe they could do better than Shane and Dable. So that's why I would make my decision now and just move on.
Now, the thing, where are they? And nobody knows, but, I mean... They're still in evaluation mode, which is why I think it's really, in a lot of ways, the worst interest to just start winning some meaningless games at the end of the year. I mean, if you start clipping good teams, again, it wouldn't change my thought process either. It might change theirs. But if they win a couple of games at the end of the year against the Raiders and the Vikings, and they allow that to change their thought on the vision of the franchise, it's catastrophic.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think that I would hope somebody already made a decision here. They can't be saying, well, we need more 8 more games of evaluation mode. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Clint is in Somerset. What's up, Clint?
Hey, guys. First time, long time. Just wanted to get into a little Brian Dable and Joe Shane talk and leave you guys with a question. But starting with Shane, I mean, anybody defending this guy still at this point just doesn't know what they're talking about. It's inexcusable what he's done over 3 full off seasons, or 4 rather now. And you can go back to last spring when we thought these guys were going to lose their jobs. Look at both sides of the ball. The best player on both sides of the ball, for all the flack that Dave Gettleman got when he was here, were Dave Gettleman picks. Andrew Thomas on the offensive line, Dexter Lawrence on the defensive line. I mean, the way he's handled this kicker debacle to start the season, inexcusable. I mean, he has to go. And the whole argument with Brian Dable and Jackson Dart, I think that stems from a little bit of Daniel Jones PTSD. We saw Daniel Jones 4 different OCs, mm-hmm. 3 different head coaches in 6 years. So I think a lot of people are worried that that might hinder his growth. But we've seen with everything going on with the injuries on the team, Dart's been able to step up and has made some really great decisions and proved, at least to a lot of the fans I've talked to, that he's the right guy. And I think we can bring some other people in and still get that out of Jackson Dart.
I agree.
Well,
Clint, I was going to say, I would agree with that. And also, think about this. I remember saying maybe a month or so, whatever it was, a lot of the things that they're running, it's you know, a variation of what they did at Ole Miss here, which is part of the reason why Lane Kiffin's name has been thrown out there. But if he was doing, like, this is kind of how he played in the SEC. He's running around. He's doing stuff off platform. So if the thought was, and they are, I'm talking about ownership now, like predetermined or at least possibly thinking about not subjecting him to what they subjected Daniel Jones to, I would think that that's the wrong way to look at it, because I don't think that this is some radical new way of playing for Jackson Dart as it is. So if it's a new coach, it's not going to be that different anyway. You're going to play to his strengths.
Yeah, perfect. That's a great point. And also, I have a question for you guys. What do you guys think? I know this name isn't super popular in Giants land, but what would you guys think about Mike McCarthy coming in and taking over as head coach? I mean, you know, he's won a Super Bowl. It might not be like the great big name that everyone wants, but he can win 10 games in the regular season, experience as a head coach. I mean, I'd rather someone like that could just kind of bring us up into that out of mediocrity and just be an above average team for a while.
Right,
as opposed to taking a swing on one of those other guys.
I like the way that you said that, Clint, and thank you for the call. And that name came up yesterday. People were texting us about it, and then obviously we took some calls on that. I respect what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying. It elevates you. It raises the floor. To me, the ceiling would not be high enough with Mike McCarthy. Now, I'm not trying to disrespect him. I just think at this point, I watched him, you know, with the Cowboys, maybe the prior hiring cycle before he took the job with the Cowboys, he was more appealing to me in the right situation. I think you could do worse than Mike McCarthy. I also think you could do better than Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, and that's the thing that they're going to have to wrestle. Like, do they want to bring in somebody that's good, like McCarthy, like a stabilizing force, yeah. or do you want to take a swing, whether it's a trade or somebody that they perceive to have, you know, home run ceiling talent, but maybe isn't really proven. So I see the value in both, because you do have to stabilize the franchise before you eventually take that next step and hopefully become champions again for the Giants. But and without that stabilization, you can't become a champion, but it's also, you can't swing for a double. You've got to, I know, but if you swing for the home run and you pop up, it could actually get worse.
Here's the bottom line.
We'll remain this bad.
Bottom line, if they hired McCarthy, I wouldn't go nuts about it, because I think he's clearly better than Brian Daboll. And I would expect the Giants to win more football games than they would lose moving forward. Now, if I'm thinking Super Bowl, I'm just not. And if I'm thinking Super Bowl long term, you know, next 5 to 10 years, you have to have that guy. To
well, who
be
the hell is that guy? I don't know if there's anybody that fits that.
But that's the point. They've been chasing that for a long time, so maybe that's not the right thought process. Like the idea of me, I love Brian Flores, and I really believe a second go around, especially with all that's gone on, he will be a great head coach somewhere. That's just what I believe. Is that somewhere here though? And is this the right time to take a chance on that? The risk. Is the risk outweighing the reward? The reward could be, well, you have your guy for the next 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a great head coach here, stabilized like John Harbaugh did with the Ravens, like Tomlin's done with the Steelers. Could be that, or it could be a bust, and then we're doing the same thing again.
I know.
Whereas with McCarthy, there's less risk, but maybe the upside is not as great as it would be with a younger, lesser-known head coach.
Well, let me ask you this. If you have somebody like McCarthy, now Andy Reid wasn't Andy Reid before he got Mahomes.
Yeah,
he was terrific, but he wasn't quite this. So if people think, and I'm more in the camp of thinking this than not, even though I need to see a whole lot more football, like if you think that Jackson Dart can elevate a good coach to a great coach, well, then maybe McCarthy could work.
He'd probably be in my shortlist. I just saw too many things from him with the Cowboys where the X's and O's were not where I would want them to be. And if I'm going to hire McCarthy, why wouldn't I just go hire Belichick? I think Bill Belichick's a better head coach. So we could disagree on where Belichick's at. You think the game's passed him by. You're annoyed with his girlfriend. I'm going to ignore that and just say, who do I think are the better head coaches? If I'm ranking Belichick, Gruden, McCarthy would be third on that list for me. Doesn't mean I wouldn't want him. It just means he'd be third on that list for me. You got to come up with some kind of list and then narrow it down based on the interview, based on certain things, how the rapport with Jackson Dart, the future, the direction. Those things are hard to know without knowing all these guys. I could see how you can make a case for Gruden being number one over Belichick. I would, of those three, and those are probably the biggest three right now, if John Harbaugh shakes free, maybe that's somebody I'd rank even higher than them because he's been with one team for so long. Like, I look at him to be the next Andy Reid, potentially. Not pound for pound, just what they do, but meaning success with one organization for so long, and I could see him building up another one the way that Reid did. Either way, there are going to be some good options, and definitively to me, better options than what they have right now with Brian Daboll.
There's going to be some good options, but nothing perfect. And listen, very rarely does something perfect present itself, but maybe, I don't know, and maybe the evaluation comes down to this. Like, if they don't think that there's a great option out there, maybe they do roll it back and then I'm just saying. I mean, rather than just going into a hiring cycle where you're like,
there's got to be somebody better than Brian Daboll.
I would think that there would be. I mean, we've identified a couple of names that are appealing to us. I just don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah. John is in Philadelphia. What's up, John?
Johnny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I do agree. I think Mike McCarthy, as of right now, is probably the best candidate. But I got to ask, do you really think John Mara would take a shot on a guy with any baggage? In my opinion, I don't see him doing that, which I think eliminates John Gruden, even though he'd be fun. I think that eliminates Brian Flores, who had the issue with the last coaching cycle. Mm-hmm. And I also think at this point, it eliminates Bill Belichick. So, again, based on kind of where we're at right now, I don't see another candidate. And I don't think the Giants should go out and try to find the next hot coordinator that's going to bring them to the promised land. I don't see it happening.
That, to me, would be stupid, trying to find the hot coordinator. I mean, how many times are we going to do that?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. So I think the Giants are, unfortunately, they're in a spot right now where they don't really have many options. And if they're going to keep Shane, I mean, I don't know how. Could you hire a coach first and then try to figure it out? And maybe McCarthy is a guy that, if he was hired, maybe he brings in his own guy. Maybe they go to McCarthy and they say, hey, who do you want to work with as a GM? It's the Giants right now. They're the new Cleveland Browns. There's no respect. I want a coach. I don't care if it's a thrill or if they're fun to listen to. I just want some wins. I want something to have. I want a little bit more respect for the Giants, which they haven't had in the last.
It's been too long. The disintegration of the brand is just it's ridiculous here. Now, you don't need Rex Ryan coming in winning the press conference. But what I think the Giants absolutely need, whomever and whenever they decide to get a new head coach, when they introduce him, there's just got to be a belief like, all right, it's finally. We have a sense, you know, where that ceiling is. We can debate that. We can determine that. It's here for McCarthy. It's here for Gruden. It's here for if they trade for Tomlin, whatever, and Lane Kiffin. But it can't be a complete guessing game. Like, we hope that this guy works out. There's no track record that tells us that it will, but our inner convictions tell us that this is the right guy. Like, there's got to be a modicum of belief that this dude's, he's in charge because he's already shown that he's done it to an extent.
Which is why Mike McCarthy would not be the worst idea or hire for
the
Giants. Quarterback's in place. You know, McCarthy could have success.
Yeah.
The floor gets elevated immediately. Whereas, let's say Spagnuolo, I'm not sold that he would come here to be any different. I can't definitively say as a head coach, Spags would be better than Brian Daboll. Me personally, I
can't say that either. How many people would excite? Now, forget about like the viability and how many people would actually excite. I'm going to give you a couple names. If Giant fans would be excited, now they'd be excited for Belichick, obviously, right? They'd be excited for Belichick.
I would think.
Are you excited for Gruden?
Yeah, 100%.
Excited for McCarthy?
I would believe so, yes.
Excited for a trade for Tomlin?
Yeah.
Excited for Harbaugh with the trade, John?
I would, yeah.
Excited for Lane Kiffin?
Probably, maybe a little bit less so, but I would still think so.
I mean, I think those are the names. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be one or two or three that obviously emerge. I think that we're going to hear a lot of those names that I just threw out.
Nick is in Jupiter, Florida. What's up, Nick?
Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good.
Not bad.
I want to just talk quickly about, Sal, you took a little bit of my thunder. I think Shane has to go. You can't keep the guy. They both come in. Daboll brings, you know, a bunch of guys that really didn't fit in, were horrible, gets them to the playoffs, shows you that he can do something with nothing, makes Daniel Jones into a viable quarterback. Our offensive line stinks, has stunk for a long time, and Shane has not made it better. I don't know moving forward if Daboll, I've defended Daboll for a long time. The last couple of games, I've definitely had some down on him. But the problem is John Gruden. Yes, I like John Gruden. The guy hasn't won a Super Bowl in 20 plus years. The guy had a losing record in the Raiders. I mean, it's you're bringing up retreads.
Well, who do you want?
I don't know. That's fine.
We're just bringing up names. Give me a name that would be appealing to you. Doesn't have to be Gruden.
I guess Belichick would be the best of it, but same thing, without Brady, he doesn't do
okay,
it.
Okay, but Nick, you know, Nick, then what do you want? I'm not asking you to go over the guys and give me their negative sides. Who would you want? You don't want Daboll. I'm not saying you have to even come up with an answer. You want to try a first-time coordinator again?
No. I think my personal opinion is you stick with Daboll for another year.
Oh.
You give him the opportunity to try to see what he can do with Dart going through. Again, we don't have any defensive backs. Our offensive line is okay. You don't have any weapons. It's the same thing. They bring seven, eight guys in the box, and you can't get open.
All right, so you're telling us what they don't have. So you want to bring back Daboll, and you're making a runway for him to come back because you're saying there's no talent. Well, then you have to be telling us that you don't want Joe Shane back, right? They both can't come
correct.
Back.
I do not want Joe Shane back. Not
so
one
you think
bit.
He's
not
more of an issue bit. Than Daboll?
100%.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that, but okay.
I do agree with that, but I don't know how you could still want Daboll back when there are better options out there. You know, Brian Dable's the head coach. But, Nick, he's gone 2-7 each of the last 3 years to start the season.
I understand that, but he's not on the field playing all the time.
No, any coach could say that. Come on, Nick.
No, but you have to have accountability for the people that put the guys on the field. And I don't get me wrong, I know Dable's in the meetings and they're talking about it, but think about the defensive coordinator for a second, the defense.
Yeah.
You put together an attack that would have been, but it goes back to Wink.
Okay, who had the issue with Wink?
Daboll did. You got two bulls fighting each other, but think about
one bull without Wink has been a loser. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I was going to say bull is, but I mean, thanks for the call.
I don't know where you go, dude.
I was in Daboll's corner. You and I had that debate years ago.
I know.
You were saying, ah, man, I don't know about Wink. And I'm like, you can't disrespect the head coach like that. I'm with Dable. Move on from Wink.
Mm-hmm.
However, the record is what it is. And Wink has not won without, Dable has not won without Wink.
No, he hasn't.
End of story.
Yeah, and this is a fallacy. I think most people know this, and we've said this over time. But to me, you don't get full separation because you're an offensive background coach that you're, if the defensive side of the ball is a mess, you're not absolved of that. Like the ability to just, and this is what Parcells was great at and other great, Sean Payton, I'm sure. You walk down the hall, you knock on the door, you sit down on the meeting for the other side of the ball that is not your direct side of the ball, and you yield some influence, you throw out some ideas, you tweak a couple of things here. Now you've got to hire people, let them do their jobs, but it can't be full autonomy when things are being driven into the ground. There's got to be a checkpoint, and the checkpoint that Dable has not been able to establish, Wink, it was a personality clash here with Bowen, it's something else. Enough of the excuses, guys.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Again, you can make a case that Dable has been better at his job than Shane. And maybe the only argument in favor of Shane would be that, can you truly fully evaluate a new regime and a general manager specifically in just 4 years? Maybe that's the only case. Like, I don't know if you could, because the expectation would be, okay, hire a new general manager. And if he doesn't have immediate success, meaning in the first four seasons, you're going to do it again. And sometimes it could take a little bit longer than that to build out. I think it's been so bad, and the record's been so bad, you can't even justify evaluating beyond this year. If they were a 500 team at this point, if they were at any point over the last 3 years a little bit better than they've been, maybe you could make a case for extending this and seeing it through a couple more years because you don't definitively know. I think 4 years could be enough if you see it as bad as it's been consistently with Shane.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence to support what we've said for a while, and we've got a lot of football to watch. I don't think it gets a lot better. I don't think either gentleman is back, but story today is what we were talking about, which not necessarily both are tied to each other, which we find kind of odd.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
What are you bringing in and out? I don't understand.
Dove has taken over the music today.
And?
And he played a song that he maybe should listen to the lyrics first.
Why? Is there cursing in it?
I know there was an F-bomb that just...
Was there? Oh, that's why. I'm wondering why you're playing. I'm like, oh, I like this song. I didn't hear the F-bomb.
Dove.
BT and Sal back on the fan.
I'll take over the music from now on.
Well, you say that, but then you just...
I gave Dove an opportunity.
You start roaming and talking, and the next thing you know, we're playing one of the generic rejoin beds. All right.
With F-bombs.
Before we get back to the calls here, the Knicks last night... Big win over the Wizards. This is not a surprise here. I love the idea that people now overreacting one way or another. And by the way, I've been getting a lot of stuff like, oh, Mike Brown, even the other day when I went to Disney on Ice over the weekend at Prudential Center, it was fantastic. And somebody's like, oh, man, Mike Clown after just four games. I'm like, dude, it's not four games. I didn't like the hire to begin with. But while we all said that, after the Knicks went, what were they, 2-2 at that point, BT? I don't think they lost. Right, because Chicago was a Friday night game. We didn't talk much about the Knicks yesterday. So they looked awful Friday night in Chicago, and then people starting to rip Mike Brown and everybody else in the process. But if you looked ahead like we did last week, their schedule's soft here. Say they get seven games in a row at home. Obviously, they beat the Bulls Sunday night. They clean up on the Wizards last night. And Cat predictably look good. Like, that's what he does. There's a reason why Karl Anthony Towns has been a perennial all-star and why the Knicks went out and got him. It still doesn't do anything for me changing what I believe in this head coach or this group or this group overall.
I'm trying to enjoy every night. I really am. And I'm going to continue to do that. I'm not going to take the wins for granted. I mean, maybe against the Wizards we might, and the Nets, and against some of the doormats here. But my dilemma coming into the season, and I said this to you, was that in a lot of ways, when you're at this point, the regular season is fairly joyless, where you know, when you lose a game you're not supposed to lose, the earth is, you know, the sky's falling. When you narrowly beat a team that you're supposed to pummel, well, why didn't you win by more? Like, it's almost never good enough, because the answer to this season is going to be told and unveiled in May, and hopefully for the Knicks and the fans, for us, in June. So this has never been about Karl-Anthony Towns. Does he have the capability to go, you know, inside and out and score 30 and get 13 rebounds and, you know, have 5 assists, which he did last night? When you're all NBA, when you're an all-star player, when you're a 25-point-a-game guy, as Karl-Anthony Towns was a year ago, you're obviously a very talented player. He was a little bit banged up with the quad. Maybe he's getting healthier here, but it's just about, like, the...
Oh, he's got to do it consistently.
He's got to do it against the teams that really matter. Yeah. And that, like, last night, again, you're better than losing, but it's not going to do anything to satisfy those of us who aren't sold on the Knicks. Like, I'm not big picture. Or those who aren't sold on Karl-Anthony Towns' big picture, which I'm not. I know he could destroy and eviscerate the Wizards and the Brooklyn Nets and the Hornets and the Raptors and teams like that. What does it look like when it's late and when it's got to be buttoned up and tough and tight? That's my concerns with him.
Well, and he's still an offensive foul machine and still reckless and out of control with the basketball. All those things remain the same. Now, I love the talent of Towns. That's why I would have made that trade back then. I would do the trade over again. I still don't know if he's necessarily the final piece. I don't believe that him and Brunson together can be a championship tandem. However, the appeal of Mike Brown should be that they figure out a way to maximize what Cat can do offensively in a way that Tibbs couldn't do that, and we're still learning. It's now, what, 6 games in, whatever it's been here. So they have admitted it. They're a work in progress. It's evaluation mode. I have a hard time hearing those things. I understand that that's the realization here. It wouldn't have been the case if it were Tom Thibodeau. It would be another year with Tibbs and a second year with Tibbs and this new version of this Knicks roster and an even deeper roster at that. So we would expect them to be better in season. And now it's like, well, it's a new coach, new system, and there's going to be a work in progress evaluation mode. Well, for a team that has championship aspirations, that's not acceptable to me. Evaluation mode of what the Jets are doing. The Knicks should be hitting the ground running here. But sports have changed, and maybe they're not going to prioritize the regular season and make it more of a learning curve and seeing what's going on. I do think that last night, forget who they played or even how many points they scored, I saw a little bit more spacing and more perimeter ball movement, which is something that I'm looking to see from this team consistently. That has not been there for the prior game. So maybe they're getting there under Mike Brown, starting to learn the offense a little bit. I still don't trust it, but, I mean, the Knicks, look, they're winning with talent. They're far, far more talented than a lot of the teams in the NBA.
There's no question.
So even if the head coach isn't good, or they're out of whack, or they're learning, ultimately the talent is going to take over the majority of the time.
Against most of the teams, yeah. Now, listen, you're starting to see some, I guess, redefining of roles here. He's tightened the rotation a bit. Kolek didn't play a lot last night. I think Kolek was averaging like 12 or 13 a night.
He's playing garbage time.
Yeah, he was averaging like 12 or 13 minutes a night. I think last night it was reduced to whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And you start to get more from Clarkson. Josh Hart's back healthy, so you're starting to see a couple of the bench components here. But think about this, right? Why is the NBA any different? I've said the last couple of years about the baseball season. The baseball, like the first part of the season, all right, see what you got. And then the next part, go and get what you don't have. And then the last part of the season, become ultimately who you're going to become.
Right.
And I think that that applies to the NBA as well. We might not want to hear it.
The NFL, the first 4 weeks, it's evaluating. Because it's largely
sloppy based on the preseason stuff here. I mean, listen, again, it's 7 games in here for most of these teams. The Celtics are 3-5. We know it's going to be a mess for the Pacers. They're 1-6. We thought the Pistons would be better. They are. I don't know. I thought the Bucks would be this good so far. They are. Same with Philly. I didn't think they'd be this good. I don't really buy it, but they are. You know, the two teams were really 3 teams that we talked about the most coming into the Eastern Conference, into the season. The Knicks, 4-3. The Cavaliers, 4-3. And the Orlando Magic, 3-4.
Yeah.
Translation, a lot of time to get it right. But for me,
I told
again,
you Sixers, man. People were sleeping on the Sixers.
I haven't watched them a ton. I just don't trust Embiid's body, dude.
Well, but still, even without him, VJ, Edgecombe, they have talent as well. Like, they can be dangerous. I just don't think it's a given that everybody was saying the same thing. Like, the Knicks are just going to find themselves in the Eastern in the NBA Finals representing the East. I don't think that's a given. And I still don't believe in Mike Brown, but it's way early here. It's only 7 games in. And look, if you don't pace the Wizards at home, if you don't pace the Bulls at home, you've got some issues. So you're right. We're evaluating. And I think there's reason to be encouraged. But I wouldn't be taking any bows definitively if I'm the Knicks at 4-3 to start what should be a championship season 4-3 through the first seven games, not good enough.
Think about when we were younger too, like those Knick teams or any other team that was really good, like a team that was in the conference finals the year before. It's autopilot. Like you come out, you're 13-2, you're 15-5, you're 23-6.
And maybe they get there at some point.
I'm not saying they won't, but yeah, it is just the changing philosophies of sports where there's less emphasis on now, there's more emphasis on being healthy when it's all said and done. And by the way, you know, Mitchell Robinson, I know he missed the start of the season. He didn't play much in the preseason. He comes back. You're already with a maintenance day here. What is the deal with him? Like, that's we can talk about Carl Anthony Towns all we want, and we will. And he had a great game last night. Really good, 33-13-5. Phenomenal. Like, all NBA kind of performance. But for the Knicks to maximize who they are, I think we all agree this. You want to see Mitch out there for 20-something minutes. You want to see Cat kind of more at the four, getting some threes, doing a little mix and match inside-outside. If Mitchell Robinson's playing once a week, where are we going?
Yeah, I mean, but you know that's the player that he is, and I'd rather them have him have maintenance days than have him get hurt again for any extended period of time. So I'm okay with them working him back slowly, especially when they're in evaluation mode to start the year. My thing is this, and I don't know if this is just today's NBA with the majority of teams. Like, if you hit the three, you're going to look great, and you're going to win. If you don't hit the three, you're not going to look great, and you're probably going to lose. And I hate that it comes down to that. But really, that's
the game, man.
Yeah, but
shoot.
That's what it comes down to.
They're
going to shoot a lot
appealing.
Of threes.
Yep.
Hey, when they hit them, look at that. This is great. The threes are going in. Yeah, that's great. But then tomorrow night, they're going to be missing them. Like, that's where they're at. And the Knicks have a lot of talent. I don't think they have a lot of great shooters, but they have a lot of good shooters and better than anything that we've seen before and on par with the best in the league. Maybe not the best, but, you know, top five, whatever you want to say there offensively. I don't know, or three-point shooting. But that, to me, is what it comes down to. And I don't know if I just don't love that being the case where, well, if they're hitting the threes, they're going to look like world beaters. And then when the threes aren't falling, they're going to be struggling.
Yeah, I think the Knicks, one of the reasons why I think the Knicks have a really high ceiling is because they're not fully reliant on the three. I mean, we know about Brunson's mid-range game, but obviously, you know, I don't love Cat in the post, but, you know, I mean, you can do some things in the right matchups there. You know, and you've got some guys who can get to the rim. Obviously, Josh Hart's a full-court guy, rebound, their offensive stickbacks, Mitch around the rim lobs. I do think the Knicks are a team that can win a couple of different ways, which is encouraging. You know, Jalen Brunson, now again, you're not going to measure against the Wizards. He didn't shoot the ball last night well. They still scored, what was it, 120 points, whatever it was. And really, almost every game, just look at the box scores, guys. I mean, it's like 125, 121, 137, 122. Like, that's really become the game. And it's I don't love it, but I also don't want to be the guy screaming on the lawn, get off it, that you know, was better back in the day, even though I believe to an extent it was. I appreciate the shooting prowess, but I do also appreciate, and it's a work in progress, what I think could be a team with a couple of different personalities that the Knicks could have. Like, I think they could dig in and become a decent defensive team. They could run you out of the gym if they're hitting threes. They could bang you around inside with the right matchup. So I'm still bullish on the Knicks. I just can't overreact to Cat going bonkers against the Wizards, a bunch of kids who are 22 years old. I can't do it.
Bullish on them, though, to what extent?
To represent the Eastern Conference. I think it's going to be a death match with the Cavaliers.
In the finals?
To get to the Eastern Conference finals. No, not even putting them there yet. No, remember when this...
I'd hope they get back to where Tibbs brought them to.
It'll be nice with all these windows that have been open for them with the injuries. Like, I think if the Knicks are, you know, in that low 50 win total, which would have seemed very disappointing to start the year, but I think it's probably going to be a little bit more than that, than closer to 60, because Mike Brown's not going to play all these games to win. Right. I know that sounds crazy. This goes back to what we started the conversation with. A lot of this is experimental, and as long as you know that, I think you can evaluate the Knicks for what they are in November and obviously beyond.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
There has been a blockbuster trade here. I can see it now. Ian Rappaport has it as well, BT. Hold on to your seat here. Bogus just came in and tried to alert us to this. I'm looking at it right now. This has been confirmed, I believe, by multiple people, but I'm seeing it with Ian Rappaport as well. Sauce Gardner is going to the Colts.
What?
The Jets have traded
bullface
Sauce Gardner.
Bullface truth. I nailed it. There's one.
The Jets have traded
Sauce. Wow.
You know what? This shows me that they have a clue.
I love this, dude. I love this. I mean, Gardner.
Told you he was overrated.
I wasn't pushing back.
Yeah. Well, we got into the fight a couple weeks ago about the Jamar Chase specifically.
Oh, yeah, but that's a coverage thing. But, but just to this, I really have no problem with this at all. Matter of fact, I like this. What are they getting back? I would like to know that. I think that they foolishly gave him an extension. I mean, and they lamented that. I'm very surprised he's looked the way he's looked. Wow, you want to talk about a bold move. And I agree. This shows a conviction. This shows a direction.
Good for Mugi.
Let's go.
And Glenn.
And Muji's been very good at trade so far. He's made some, lower level, not a profile like Sauce, but wow, this is a rocker right here. Let's go, baby.
Oh. We got Baldy here on the line. Dude, you'll love this. This is giving me goosebumps.
Oh, Colts,
are trading 2 first round picks.
You
to the
gotta
Jets.
Be kidding me, Sal. This is fantastic, baby. Let's go. Hey, give me some, Hoff. The day.
Ow. Hoff, why are you hitting me?
Easy, Hoff. He's fragile over there.
We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider Calls brought to you by Nationwide. Mm. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Boldy, I didn't think they had it in them.
Wow.
I'm pleasantly surprised here. Give us your initial reaction to hearing Sauce Gardner traded to the Colts.
I mean, I'm surprised. I really am. I thought he was going to be a core player for a long time with this organization, especially Aaron Glenn being a former corner with the Jets and the relationship you thought has not played great, certainly over the last 2 seasons. But I just did the Colts game against Pittsburgh, and I talked to Lou Anarumo on the sideline before the game, and they had just gotten Jalen Jones back, and he'd been hurt. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, so what? Like, okay, what am I supposed to do with that? The Colts feel like they can make a legitimate run. I know the offense didn't play well against Pittsburgh, but I feel like they think they can make a legitimate run through the AFC. And if they had a real number one corner that could match up when they got to play some of these teams, that it would only help them because the front is very good. The linebackers are very good.
Okay, no disrespect to the Colts, but I don't care about the Colts right now. Let's get to the Jets' perspective here. I mean, Boldy is coming out of nowhere. And to get 2 first-round picks here, this at least, this shows like a boldness and a direction, like a clear willingness to make a call that's going to be unpopular in the eyes of some Jet fans, not me. But doesn't this have to give Jet fans some more confidence that the front office has a clue and a grip on what they want to do?
Well, they just traded away 2 starting corners, in the last week now. Michael Carter, to the Eagles. And now, it's clearer that they're looking at the future here. And they're going to get as many chips as they can to go, whether it's to get a quarterback, whatever it is. They are thinking long term with this group right here. And that's what it tells me, that we're willing to trade one of our, key core players to build for what we think can be a better future if we can keep this group together right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Sauce as a player overall, Baldy, watching the film? You think he's overrated, or where are you at with Sauce?
Well, I mean, he was dynamic his first year. I mean, he just threw a net over every receiver that he went against, and they couldn't get past him, and he was an all-pro player. But he has not played at that level since then. He doesn't look like he has a great deal of confidence in when he's going against elite players. The way you got to play in this league, you got to keep your hands off guys. You got to play the ball in the air. The ball skills are non-existent. I've teased him about it. Like what's he have? 1 interception in the last 2 years? And how many for his entire career? I mean, your corners, you want your corners and safeties to be able to take the ball away,
mm-hmm.
whether it's tips, whether it's, just the instincts of where the ball is going to be and beating the receiver to the spot. Like he doesn't produce in that area the way that I think a lot of teams covet. Now, if you're just shutting guys down or you're defending passes, like he did his rookie year when he had 20 passes defense, you can live with that. But if guys are getting over the top on you and you're committing penalties and you're not taking it away, then, you're not an elite player in this business.
So what's next for him here? I mean, we like to have you on and get to the film stuff and how players are doing, but I mean, this is breaking news. This is a big day. I mean, Breece Hall, would you trade him? And what do you do? You just keep going if you're the Jets?
I think so. I mean, Breece Hall's had a fantastic game in the last week. You can see that he still has vision and cutting ability and breakaway speed. He's got all that. But, I mean, if you're going to trade away Sauce, then why not? I mean, you just won a game without Garrett Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's supposed to be their best receiver, and it's the best the quarterback's ever looked, you know? And so, you know, I mean, Tyler Johnson looked just fine, and, you know, maybe the rookie, you know, Aaron Smith can be okay. But regardless, I don't think anybody is untouchable at this point. I mean, it's clearly about the future if you're trading away Sauce in the very prime of his career.
Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. BT and Sal talk about Brian Baldinger. Don't you think, Baldy, that this can expedite the process of bringing in guys to clean up what has been a horrible culture for so long? When you have Muji, new GM, Aaron Glenn, new head coach, they tried winning some games here. Finally, you got the win against the Bengals. But the only way to really change the culture is to change the roster and rid yourself of the players, even if they're good players like Sauce or potentially Garrett Wilson or Breece Hall. Don't you think that expedites the process here, and it's something you could be excited about from a Jets perspective, trying to clean house and bring in new players?
Well, we've seen the Jets with 4 first-round draft picks. They didn't change much at one point in their careers. I mean, it depends on what you're doing with them and what kind of players you're bringing in and what you're looking for. And so, you know, Darren's going to get this opportunity to bring in his kind of guys. Not that Sauce wasn't. I'm sure Sauce, I mean, every time I've been in practice, he's the first guy on the field. Like, he's always working. You know, he's always preparing. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with Sauce, the person, the culture, or anything like that. He just didn't have massive production at the quarterback position. But, yes, they got an opportunity. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys over there. I mean, it's not that there's that many veterans, but I think everybody's sick of losing over there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if Quinnen was on the show with us right now, like, he'd tell you he's sick of losing, sick of, you know, being in the lazy boy at 5 o'clock after another loss, you know? I mean, so, you know, at some point you go, you know, I mean, let me go someplace else and win some games, see what that's like.
I don't know how much you can answer this better than us for sure, but like when you get traded in the NFL, it's obviously different than getting traded in baseball where you just get in the batter's box and do your thing, et cetera. You know, some plays in the NBA, so that's a little different, but going from, whether it's Sauce or anybody, from one franchise midweek, midseason to another, that's different stuff in the NFL, no?
It is, but I mean, Jalen Phillips just left Miami, and that's a miserable place to be right now, and he's playing for Philadelphia, and he looks like the happiest guy on earth. But, you know, it depends on, you know, if it's about winning and the culture of winning and that feeling you get from winning, then Sauce is going to be in a better place, much better place. They've got a really good team, really good team. So is it difficult? Yeah. Like, you know, in the middle of the week, who's taking care of the house? What do I take with me? You know, where do I live? Like, all the, you know, am I in a hotel for the rest of the season? I mean, all those kind of things. It's your day off. You're going to Indianapolis at some point today. Your life just changed. You're no longer a New Jersey resident. You're in Indianapolis where you don't know anything. He's from Detroit, so maybe he's been to India a little bit. But, yeah, your life is change, but sometimes it's changed for the better.
Baldy, how about the Giants here? I thought it was an embarrassing performance against the Niners team that was certainly vulnerable, being as banged up as they were. What'd you see on film, Giants-Niners from Sunday?
Defensively, that was awful. Just awful. I mean, you know, to see them run the ball 8 times in a row, right down their throats, there's nothing that you want on your resume. Nobody wants that on the resume. Like, you couldn't get them off the field. They didn't do anything. They literally, I mean, you're paying all these guys this money. Brian Burns got himself, you know, another sack. And, you know, Abdul got a fumble recovery there to take him off the field. But, like, they're not affecting the game at all, any of them. I mean, what Deontay Banks did on that Brian Robinson touchdown is just embarrassing. And you have to be called out when you play like that. But, they just didn't do anything defensively. And if it's not for Jackson Dart, they probably don't score a point. You know, I mean, that guy is everything. He's the whole offense.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, that guy is amazing. I just feel bad that he's got very little help around him. I don't know what happened to Tyrone Tracy. He looked like a good back last year. Like, I don't know what he's doing right now, but it's not like he's breaking tackles or doing anything like we thought, you know, we were looking at from a year ago.
Boldy, what is Dart's best quality?
He has an unbelievable ability to maneuver in a pocket and keep a play alive. And whether he's running or whether it's, you know, finding an open receiver, but it's just, it's the competitive fire that he has. And sometimes I wish he didn't have that much. So, like, I thought Tatum Bethune put him to sleep, you know, in the middle of the field on a scramble. Like, I was worried the way he got hit. I'm glad they flagged it. But regardless, like, he's got to protect himself. But the competitive fire and just the unbelievable awareness in a pocket and where to maneuver, he's very good at it.
Baldy, make a case for the Giants to keep Joe Shane and Brian Daboll.
Well, you got 8 or 9 games left to play. You know, if you show some level of improvement overall, or just competitive fire and win some games, they got to win games. I mean, period. I don't care who they beat and how they beat them. But we're seeing teams that are coming off the mat and playing good football. Like, it's not, they've got to finish way better. That was, like, to see the 49er fans in that stadium, like, that was gut-wrenching if you're Brian Daboll or Joe Shane right now. And that's going to happen again. It's going to happen again to a team that's coming into that stadium.
Yep.
49ers travel like crazy, but that will happen again this year. And that would be gut-wrenching if it's all the opposing team in that stands.
Yeah, and what I was saying, Baldy, once they play the lower-profile teams at the end of the year that don't have a national brand, that don't travel, well, then they'll just be empty seats instead of, you know, yes, the opposing fans. And that's going to make it untenable for ownership. So I think they're going to have a new coach. And I know it's a little early for this year, but we, you know, throwing names out. I mean, Belichick? I mean, do you call them? I mean, is he done? Is it worth it? What do you do?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he's available, I don't know where the contract is at North Carolina. If he's available, you know, he basically got his start in New York with Parcells and started off as assistant special teams. I mean, he knows the history of this organization and the Mara family. I mean, you should at least, if he is available, make the call, have the conversation. But you'd kind of like to see this thing build with somebody young and fresh, you know, the way some of these franchises, nobody knew Nick Sirianni. You know, when he came to Philly, he was the 7th guy on their list of guys that they interviewed that year. But you kind of like to see it build with a proven general manager and a young coach that you could grow with.
Thank you, Baldy. We appreciate the time as always.
Okay, you bet, guys.
Thanks.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.